Hey, I'm Jess.
And I'm Amy, and this is the Synchronized Swim Podcast.
Synchronized Swim began in 2017 as a website where we, two longtime friends, each agreed to write one essay a week about something. Art, faith, sitcoms, general malaise, disillusionment, wild hope, being wrong, pizza. The list is endless.
This podcast is a companion to that website where we will be featuring essay readings, conversations, bonus stories, and special guests.
We are so glad you're here.
Hey, team!
We're back.
It has been a while.
I actually don't know the last time we made this.
I think it was about a year ago.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was a really long time.
About the patron saints?
A little less than a year, because I had recently moved into my house.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was like April.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we're back.
And we're actually both in Los Angeles.
Yes, we are sitting together in the flesh in our friend Hannah's bedroom.
On the floor.
Hollywood, California. The glamorous life.
Yes, Amy is here visiting, so we thought it was sort of time to do this.
Yeah, we're bringing it back. And lots of things have been changing for Synchronized Swim recently, so it actually feels like the best time to be bringing the podcast back. And I think we both think that this will be a really good way to engage with the work.
Well, especially if you're a reader, you probably have noticed that we haven't posted in the past couple of weeks, and that comes up in both of the essays that we're talking about today. So we won't go too much into it, but there's kind of less material that we want to put out and more engagement with the ideas that we are more prepared to both write about and talk about. So this kind of seemed like a natural progression.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're both changing dramatically. And it does feel like a lot of the things that we're thinking about now, we think about for quite a long time.
Before we
write anything. And even to the point where I think conversation is really valuable in this time, where maybe in the past the essay was the thing. Now the long thought about all these things that we've always been thinking about, but now it's different.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you look at the website, we talk about the same like five
over
ideas
and
pretty
over.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense.
It does. It checks out.
Yeah. So we're not thinking about anything different. We're just dealing with it differently and writing differently. And
perhaps thinking about it more long form and less worried about what the outcome might be.
Yeah. We should probably give like a tiny update of like what's been going on with us lately.
Oh, yes, please. I'm going to grab my water while you do that. Oh,
okay, I'll get started. How fun. So Jessie's leaving the room.
Not the room.
Just the water. Okay, she's just grabbing the water. I am here in Hollywood visiting my friends who live across the entire country from me. I recently have been doing a lot of work with my small business, All Well Workshop. I finished a poetry manuscript and sent it in for some poetry prizes. That felt like a huge milestone for me. It feels really significant, especially given that I have no idea what that means or what it will become. But in any case, it's a really good thing. And writing-wise, I feel really excited about continuing to work on longer form projects and also trying to prioritize publishing, which definitely means that I have to sort of treat the work differently, which feels like it's not a natural transition for me, so I'm trying to figure that out too.
That's so real.
It's so hard.
That is, yeah. It is hard. That's kind of, I've been up to different things, but it's the same.
Yeah.
The spirit is the same.
Because that's really the spot we're in now.
Yeah, and it's so funny that these are the essays we're reading, because I'll say my update before I live in Los Angeles. I just passed my year marker living here. I've mostly, if I had to like isolate my job, it would be as a background extra, which is really funny. It's mostly funny. It's also exhausting and ludicrous and any number of other things. But it's the main way I've been working out here while also auditioning for other projects and trying to understand the film industry, which is it's massive. Like, it is the biggest industry in the world in a lot of ways. Hmm. And in terms of, like, commerce, at least. Like, it has more money than...
Yeah.
It's shocking.
So much money.
Well, it's staggering. Yeah. Like, even something that you're like, I don't know a single person that watches this. The amount of money that goes into... whatever. That's not the point. But I have been doing that while also doing other projects, like, for film and theater and auditions and agents, blah, blah, blah. And while also doing hysterical other side jobs, as is my way. And I similarly feel like it's kind of a turning point in terms of work, because I think, at least for me, the first couple, several years, I guess 3 or 4 years, am I in 4 years? Don't even know. Out of college.
Four.
There's all this energy and all this, like, latching onto things, and then you kind of land on the thing and you're like, well, this is just going to be hard, but, like, it requires a focus and really a boundary. Like, there are boundaries around it that are different than other kinds of work. Like, when you're just kind of grasping at all sorts of endeavors, right? Like, you're like, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a writer, I'm a poet, I'm an artist, I'm an artist, lol. But, like, all these different things, and then you kind of land on the thing and you're like, oh, well, this is it, which is frustrating because it means I will continue to be unpaid and it means I will continue to just have to winnow in on this one thing.
Yeah.
And that it will be most largely lonely. That's kind of what, that's like the main takeaway of my year living here. Like, I feel very grateful and very sure of my choices and of my pursuits. But
lonely.
It's lonely. Yeah, it's really lonely. Which I wonder, I mean, I know we'll...
Just makes me think of Joe March.
Oh, my God. But it's true. I mean, it's the truth, and that's why...
But I'm so lonely.
But I'm so lonely. Yeah, because I am. Like, even I'm surrounded by people that love and know me well and, like, are doing similar things, but it's just... I think it's lonely to finally choose...
It is.
It is. It's lonely to choose something because it means you have to give up a lot of other things to really choose it, and that's...
I've been feeling markedly lonely lately, too.
Yeah.
And it just is... what it is. It feels almost appropriate, but
yeah, it doesn't, frustrating. Well, but that's the thing, is it doesn't feel bad. Like, it's different than when you're, like, at a party and you're like, I don't know anybody here. It's like, no, like, I'm just by myself, and it would be nice to share this with someone, but if this is what's required to complete this task, like, then that's part of it. That's just, like, par for the course.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I don't know about you, but I feel like I've spent so much, I know I've spent so much of the last 3 and 4 years, like, listening to podcasts of people I really admire, like, reading about their lives, looking. It's like, this is literally every single person that I admire describes this exact moment. And I'm not saying that that's, like, priming us for greatness or something, but you read it, it's like, yeah, you have to make these weird choices. That the thing I keep saying when people ask me about it, it's like, it's kind of offensive to choose to make something that you want to be really good, because it means you'll kind of have to say things that don't make a lot of sense to the person not doing them, including, like, I can't come, sorry, like, and no reason, or, like, that doesn't work for me. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's almost offensive.
It is. Yeah. You start to not make sense to... You start to make sense to fewer and fewer people.
But that's fine, because the people who get it, but you see your world kind of zeroing in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the reason we feel compelled to, at least the reason I feel compelled to talk about it, is it's just like I said, like, you hear people talk about it, but it's in the past tense, and it's kind of strange when you can feel it happening, and so much of Synchronized Swim has been about describing this really important, but, like, very painful and weird and embarrassing period of time between
college and success.
Yeah, or I don't know, input and output. Like,
actually, that's true. It's Yeah, I think something that both of us have been good at, maybe because of synchronized swim or they're codependent, but just is like paying attention and being interested in these things that are actually quite hard to parse.
But very fertile creatively.
Yeah, we've been prolific, and I think that's really interesting too.
It is.
I was talking to my collaborator Amelia, and she said, "I want to be prolific," and I said, "Me too," and I think we are. Like Amelia is, I am, you are. Like we make work at a breakneck speed, which is so interesting. Like this the past 4 years, 5 years have been so fertile for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that I'm starting to run into is the very real problem of like, well, what's happening with that work? Like, what is it becoming? The fact that it's standing still distresses me. That it's like not, that nothing's happening with it. And I don't think something should happen with all of it, but I do think that I want some movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, I do. It makes me think of that Wendell Berry, that really short poem that's like terrifying, where he says, it's so scary. The first time I read it and understood what it meant, I was like, I want to die. I don't want this. Like he says, there comes a time like when you reach the point where you don't know what to do.
Oh.
The impeded stream is the one that sings. Like yes. Something, that whole concept.
Well, and oh gosh, it brings you back to Jo Marsh. Because her fantasy stories, she was prolific, but she couldn't write
the book yet. Yeah.
She didn't have it yet. And she felt thwarted and frustrated and like some of it has been good and like
because you can it gives you an opportunity to do something else, but when you find out that it's not the thing you're supposed to do, you're like, well, I can't do that anymore. Like, yeah. If I could be prolific. And, like, okay, a lot of our writing, if we're just using the example of Sink Swim, like, some of it's shit, right? Like,
it's terrible.
A lot of it's bad. Like, you read it, but at the same time, I'm like, but I remember one of our friends telling us, saying something to the effect of, like, it's, like, yeah, like, they're not all, you know, golden, but, like, you show up every week, and that's... Just what you said, like wanting to be prolific, there really is nothing to do but like forcing yourself to show up and be embarrassed by letting people read like not great stuff. Like you and I both have done poetry projects where that truly just required us to write something every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went through my haikus recently because I was trying to compile a manuscript and I was looking at them. I was like, some of these are garbage and some of them are like really good and I never would have written them if I hadn't.
And you don't get to pick on any given day.
No, you don't. And that's part of it, is it's like it's not always inspiration. Like, it really is good training to just make yourself do stuff you don't want to do creatively, because that's where you eventually find what it is you
mean
to do.
That is why it's so interesting to have this, like, dual practice in my life of writing and then also my business, which feels a lot more like publishing. Because in my business where we publish sewing patterns, there's a... It's so interesting to see the end result of a thing that is near perfect and that has been thought about for months and is like has gone through so many iterations, and it just sort of feels like building a house. And the prolificness feels different there because there's such opposing things, but they're both work. And it's interesting. It's not quite a closed thought, but I'm just thinking about the dynamic there
of the sort of
like, I know how to make a good sewing pattern
and it's a product,
and every day I show up to it, I know what the steps are, and by the end it's as good as I knew it would be at the start.
Mm-hmm.
With writing, I don't, there are no steps, there's no like, I can't see the thing,
and you can always change it.
Yeah,
that's what's frustrating.
And you can always change it.
Yes,
you never know when you're done with a sewing pattern. You know when you're done, you're like, oh, it's done, this is it, I can hand it to you, it makes sense. With writing, you don't know what you're writing even when you're writing it. Like, it just is, even when the essay feels like it's falling from the sky, which I feel sometimes, and it's a euphoric feeling.
Well, and the essay that you're reading is like that.
Yeah, it's, well, and it felt that way to write it.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, now I look at it and I'm like, well, what is it? Like, what, I can't sell this to anybody, I can't, like, it's still a nonsensical, like, blob of something that isn't anything, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's actually really good to have that opposing force in my life and in my work of, like, things that make sense and are discreet, and then something that's totally wild and indiscreet. But sometimes I feel really torn between the two. And it's hard to switch modes.
Understandably, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to just read your essay?
Sure. Sounds good.
Yes.
Okay, let's go into it. The End of the Decade, a essay by Amy, first published December 30th, 2019. I write this fresh from watching an interview with Greta Gerwig, so forgive me my wildness. It's like I've been spending time with the best part of my brain, the imaginary friend of my hope and ambition, my intellect, my heart. I saw Little Women last night, the 9:40 p.m. showing, walking in knowing that I would love it, and I could trust Gerwig's choices explicitly, and experiencing the film in such comfort and fullness and, I suppose, happiness. That was a blessing for the next decade, I'm sure of it. Or maybe a benediction for this one. I cried a dozen times throughout the movie, but always at the strangest small things. Tears streaming down my face, my husband beside me. I wanted to see it with him or alone, no one else. It felt like I was on the screen speaking. It felt like the childhood my inner child had, not in reality, but in spirit. It felt like the adulthood I'm stepping into. I'll try not to let my having seen Little Women last night make this essay completely incoherent, though that's how my mind feels right now, euphoric and crazed and incoherent. It turns out that seeing this film was a wonderful catalyst for beginning to reflect on the past 10 years, on who I am. After seeing the film, I'm different than I was before, and I don't say that lightly, but I knew I would be. I knew it would have that effect. A blue streak of recognition, the threshold of revelation, walking into the theater knowing it would be some sort of meaningful baptism, and it was. I put off seeing it for a few days because of it. It came out on Christmas Day, and I saw it 4 days later. I needed that time. This all might sound melodramatic, but it doesn't feel that way. Shouldn't art have the power to explode you? Shouldn't you be able to see it coming from afar, as if in slow motion? Wouldn't you want to prolong the moment before just a little bit? It's so much more complicated after. And now, it's the end of the decade. In the past 10 years, I've gone from 16 to 26. They're my Little Women years, in all seriousness. There's a reason I've always loved the story, a reason I'd read the book in study hall in middle school, keep it in my locker. A reason I've watched the 1994 version more than 20 times in this decade. 30, 40, more than twice a year for sure. A reason that I'll watch this new version even more. I began this decade as a child, I end as an adult, and I feel I'm just now coming into my own, stepping into what my life will be with breath and acceptance. This decade was a frenzy of coming-of-ageness, of art and work and fear and romance. I loved so many boys, I chose someone to marry, I learned what I'm capable of and what I reject. I've always felt so big and so small. Too big for my life, but also so needful of being home and alone, in places that make sense, where I can operate on my own terms. I've always found my sisters in the world, not needing really anyone else. I have only a few friends, but the women I have loom so large, fill my gaps. I've never been social, I've been familial and fierce. I struggle to make money. I lurk in the shadows scribbling. I dance through the streets, I make no sense. I care so little for popular culture, for what is cool. I know what I like. I wait in my own life as it unfolds around me. I get so frustrated as I watch it slip away. I chose marriage easily, as if it just happened to me. As if Isaiah and I landed together on the same strange planet alone. My mind has clarified and quieted. I have so much sorrow and stunningly few regrets. I wrote my way through the decade, starting with truly terrible but deeply felt journal entries, practicing something I didn't understand yet, some strange impulse to extract what I was feeling, and learn how to remember. An impulse toward poetry, but no technique. Nothing to write about, no eyes to see. Then, at 16, I was pure energy, pure experience, pure narrative. I wrote down all the facts, what happened, and to who, and how it felt, broad strokes. I had strong morals, strong beliefs. I'd lie awake at night looking out my bedroom window at the suburb street below, the streetlight and mailbox, the lawn, thinking about the world, feeling the romance of it. I hate to read my teenage journals now. The writing is so truly stilted and awful. I wouldn't mind burning them. It's like I knew that the particulars of what was happening wasn't quite important, but I needed to work through it anyway. So many interpersonal quibbles and crushes on charming boys who weren't enough for me. I was spinning my wheels. I was so often alone. I was working so hard, learning to dance, doing so many musicals, away from home from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day, doing my homework in the interstitial moments, hardly eating meals, filling my days. My energy then was astonishing. I needed to do it. I needed my days to be filled and taken away from me. I could feel the weight of my childhood pulling me down, and I was lifting from it with muscle and excitement, held back only by enchantment and nostalgia, by the ease of not having to make money or make it in the world yet. Now, when I write, I say what I mean to say. It feels like a strange fact of my life that I'm a writer. It's inconvenient, really. No one likes writers. Or everybody likes them in theory, romantically, but no one wants to help them survive. But I'm good at it now, the writing part, not the survival part. It comes out of me just as I hear it. I haven't felt like writing for the past few weeks because I don't want to write about nothing. I'll know it when I hear it, like a song. I don't want to write something that isn't good. That didn't used to be the case. I remember blogging right after I got married, reading other blogs and practicing writing in that style, practicing, 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 learning how to mimic and expand the style, trying to slide in my poetry. I didn't know what poetry was, but I felt it in me like a pulse. The thing I wanted to write, I wanted to put it somewhere, even places that didn't make sense. I've been learning poetry. I've been learning what I love and what I hate. I've been so frozen by money and by the problems of these modern times, by smartphones and what I see when we're driving and I look out the window, so many stores. The past few months, I felt such a yearning to become a mother. And if that isn't a gate into another decade, another life entirely, then I don't know what is. I feel a hinge in me, something opening, a real change. I grieve what is gone, how much I can't remember. I've always had a terrible memory, but just in this past year I've been learning that what I need to remember sticks to me as if with a pushpin. Things scribbled on a note. Images and memories of tiny specific things, nothing more. It washes away, so much of my life out with the tide. It's fine. I'll wave to it as it goes. I remember what I need to. I feel very aware that I am growing up, or maybe I've grown up. I was very mindful of that as I watched the film last night, watching the sisters write and put on plays in the living room just as I did, spending time not having to take care of anyone else. How does a little woman age? What becomes of her when she is 30 or 40? These are my questions now. I've seen girlhood depicted so satisfyingly over and over. I've relived this decade of my life 1,000 times. But what of all that comes next? I wonder about it. I stand on the threshold. Marmy has always been interesting to me, a sort of fantasy mother, the kind I'd like to be. But what of her? I was reading an essay about the character just now, Marmy, putting towards the thought that was quietly cloying as I watched the film. I don't think Little Women should ever be a film about Marmy, but I feel myself on the edge of my youth. I'm the most young and beautiful I'll ever be right now. The most freedom I'll have is already in the past. I am already married. I hope to have a baby in the next year or two. Who knows? So often marriage is the end of the story. The mother fades into the background of the bright protagonist's journey. So what is my life? What am I to do? The film was a marvelous way for me to process this decade, but leaves me with so little to pick up and carry into the next. I suppose that's my great work. It's my life after all, not Louisa May Alcott's, nor Greta Gerwig's. I want to have children and raise them. Raising four sisters is not the same as being one of them. I grieve what is gone. I think I will love what comes next too, but it will be different. Life keeps changing. Adulthood is so different from childhood. In this year alone, we bought a house and got a dog, and I feel a shift in the way I look around me, the way I spend my time, what I crave and want to do. I want to make money enough to live simply, no more. I want to read books. I want to take care of the things that depend on me. I want to love my husband and be loved in return and speak truth. My life is becoming smaller in so many ways. I'm zeroing in on it. But it doesn't stop there. There's still more that I want. I maintain that vital energy that I had when I was 16 and filling my days to the brim. I keep practicing and practicing, doing all sorts of things that don't pay me in any way. For what? For what? Maybe it's play. Maybe it's girlhood. Maybe it's freedom. Maybe it's all my way of taking care of my inner child, the precocious, brilliant performer I was. The anxious one who couldn't sleep because there were too many worries, who wanted to love and be seen, who never felt understood. But it's different than that, too. I have art to make. I have poetry to write, things that aren't childish at all. I can't ignore who I am and relegate that work and energy to girlhood, even though that's where it began. I can't leave it there. It's the end of the decade. These 10 years have been so much, have carried me such a great distance. I don't wish to go back, but I do feel like I have much less of an idea about my life than I've ever had before. I'm at a loss. I feel quieted. Maybe satisfied? Not quite. I'd still like to be great. Not famous, but great. I'd like to make things that mean something to someone, be someone's kindred spirit, say the things I mean to say and have them be heard. I want to do things for other people. I want to stretch out of myself so much more than I have. I'd like to be published. I'd like to keep writing. I want to work. I think this decade of my life, this one I'm leaving, will keep on singing and unfolding itself, revealing what was important, the things that I can remember, the parts that are stuck to me forever. This decade was about myself. It was so personal, so internal, so deep and wide and unspeakable. I don't think this next decade will be about me so much. I sense that even now. I think I'll have to shed myself and die a little, lay some things down. And that's good. That's hard. Life is so big when you're young. It belongs to you. It's becoming smaller, more beautiful too. It belongs to everything and everyone. I see more clearly. I love more fiercely. I am more certain, more patient. I know nothing will ever feel like I think it will, but sometimes I see myself within my life and the image of it is so beautiful and luminous and has nothing to do with me. It's just living. It could be anybody. Boiling water in the morning, the light in the windows, silence, writing what I want to write. Who will read it? I don't care. The act of it, fingers on keys, the way it feels. My sweet dog who I have to take care of, an echo of future children I know. Being a woman, loving a man, something I chose with such gusto, a long-standing, age-old, fascinating problem that I turn and turn over like a puzzle box, like so many women before me. I keep stepping into such timeless things. Amazing how a story that's been retold over and over, Little Women, is my very own. As I watched the film, I felt so special. Me. It was mine, my life, my work. I could hold it in my hand and see it all at once, and it was so beautiful, my own self. How did that happen? How did the film do that? It's what poetry does, hands yourself to you, gathers you up in your arms, makes you one with everything. Everything is one. I am not special, but my life keeps amazing me. I await the next decade with curiosity and savor, as if I haven't heard the story ever before.
Okay, I feel the need to say, I wish that everyone could have, I mean, we're sitting so close and I'm just like hearing Amy read this, and I like I think I did start crying at one point. Just like sitting here beaming, like staring at her while she's reading this. And I feel, before we start, it's like it's so special to read that essay in particular, because I like you so succinctly. It's this beautiful, like, all the things I have to ask and talk to you about are, it's, like, this gorgeous dance between, like, real, succinct, like, pinning the bug to the board and, mm-hmm. like, very broad, there is no answer of yeah. all of the things that, like, specifically have to do with your life. Mm. Like, and all of the ways that you and I have talked about that just in the course of our friendship, which I've only known you for, like, a third of your life, but it's,
yeah.
which is cool. But, like... that whole essay is both of those things. Like, everything I wrote down to ask you about is, like, it just, it's really alive with this sureness that understands that it can't really be sure of much except, yeah. except beauty and except change, really. And, but I think that's really the heart of what you're getting at is this, like, gorgeous, like, growing up is relinquishing these old thoughts in understanding, like, there's enough room for them to be not what I expected.
Hmm.
And, like, for it to be delighted by what you find, or at least, like, full in what you find, even though you wanted all of these things. And then you get there and you're like, it does look different. And that doesn't change the wanting, but, like, there's a fullness to it.
Yeah.
Like, the way you talked about romance the whole way through, like, romance, I noticed that as, like, and hearing you read it. Like, romance, I think when you're young, you're like, I just want someone to pick me. Like, yeah. I want someone to show up at my window and play in your eyes and, like...
It's exactly what I wanted.
Yes.
That was the biggest fantasy in my life.
And then you get to your life, and, like, specifically, right, that example, but, like, the romance of life itself is, like, wanting the world to choose you. Yeah. Like, wanting the world and everyone in your world... like, and globally, whatever, to, like, lean into you and be like, you have something to do. I love you. I understand you. I see you.
Yeah.
And, like, in an actual relationship. And then you get to, you know, wherever the world, whatever. And, like, romance is two-sided. Like, it's a mutual wooing. It's, like, a mutual giving.
Yeah.
And you have these ideas about it. Like, I just want to be the object of the pursuit. It's like, no, I want to be active. I want to participate.
I want to pursue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And that, I think that's part of the change, too, is, like, the... I think I have always been pursuing, but not always sure what. Mm-hmm. Like, and it does feel different now to know what it is. Mm-hmm. And, to, like, have chosen something to woo, that feels different. It's not as amorphous. It's the difference between, like, as a teenager being, like, who will it be? Who mm-hmm. will I marry? And then standing in front of that person and being, like, oh, you're a person.
Entirely separate from me.
Yeah.
And like, my idea.
I don't know what's going on with you, you know? Even the person you know best in the world. Yeah. From the like, it could be anyone, it can be anything, I can imagine it however I want, to the, like, well, I guess it's you and me then. Like,
but it's the same. Like, you have multiple ideas that run through that essay. Like, romance is one of them.
Yeah.
But another one is energy and, like, mm-hmm. vitality. This idea of, I loved the way you put, how did you put it? Like, I needed my days to be filled and taken away from me.
Yeah.
Because that's so much of being young, is just what you're saying. Like, there's all this hunger, there's all this energy, there's this vitality and this ferocity, really, but it's aimless because you don't.
Yeah.
Not aimless isn't the right word, but you know what I mean.
Like, and I think that's why I did musical. I loved doing musical theater, and it was just, like, the perfect and most exciting way to bide my time. And work hard, practice how to work, learn how to be in a group. Like, it was just such a training ground for my life in a way that, like, I'm not a musical theater performer now, but it taught me so many of the things that I need now. And I just did it so much. I had so much energy that I don't have anymore.
But
I do.
But you do. And yeah. The difference is... that it's focused on something, it's like the undercurrent is the same. But when you need someone or something, musical theater, to fill your time, it's it's like it's like just make it pass, like just make it pass, yeah. And then you get there, and it's like, okay, well now I'm the one filling my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I've become so masterful at.
You are really good at that.
I am really good at feeling at home in my life, mm-hmm. and making it a place where I can live, like as if my life were my house. And other people have told me that before. Like, I think it is a special gifting of mine that I know how to shape my days in a way that fits for me. And I think that's a skill that I've been crafting for the last decade, ever since. And it's so interesting that this decade was from 16 to 26. Like, that is such a passage.
That really is. Yeah.
And that feels almost like a cool, like, particularity of me and of you, that like it really was just like 16 is such like sweet 16.
You're well, and like, that's beginning, the cusp, you know? Of a true adulthood. Yes. Right, like you're like, okay, I finally have some autonomy.
When you turn 16, you're like, oh, like I'm getting to start to see who I'm gonna actually be, mm-hmm. you know. But then also like actually thinking back to that, and especially the things I was writing then, it's truly like, what in the actual world was this girl thinking, you know?
But
like,
it's that other thing you said, the most freedom you'll already have is already in the past. And yeah. That's the thing, you're the most free in this amorphous, floating, needy mm-hmm. time. Like, you're the freest 16, 17, 18, 19. Like, that's...
Yeah.
But there's nothing to do with it. And then you're...
I know.
Like... What was, okay, those were the two main things I wanted to, this is leading nicely into, okay, so we've both been listening to a lot of Greta Gerwig interviews, and
yes,
one of the ones,
so many,
are training ground for a lot of things we're doing, but she talks in one, in particular, about how Little Women really is a story about commerce in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. because, like, yes, there's all the things you said, like how girlhood as an emotional and, like, spiritual whatever experience, but it's really, we were just talking about this and I had to like hold off because I wanted to talk about it with you, like when you reach a certain age you realize it's like I am paying to live, like someone used to the freedom of life up until a certain age. Like I think a big marked gross difference between adulthood and childhood is like when you're an adult you are paying to live,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, okay, so I have to find a way to like either provide a service, skill, or product that will, seriously, that will make me able, make it possible for me to pay for my own life. And that's what Little Women is literally about, is like,
yeah.
Jo March, it's interesting in terms of like masculinity versus femininity, because she's like, her thing is like, she's so feminine, but in her world, like she's considered masculine because of her ambition, really.
Yeah.
And so she kind of like fulfills this so-called masculine role of like, well, I'm gonna go be the breadwinner for my family, like I'm gonna go. And even then, like when it was, it's just interesting that freedom is devoid typically of commerce, and like in entering business, in entering economic whatever, like you are giving up personal freedom,
yeah.
in order to participate in a marketplace.
Yeah.
And
it's interesting, like, another fact of my life is that, just so many things. It's amazing how privileged my life has been in that regard, mm-hmm. where, like, I've never been in a position where I've been the only person making the money for my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have always had people to fall back on, someone I could call if I got in trouble. Like, I've never been in a truly perilous spot.
Yeah.
And in fact, I've always been in a comfortable place. That has to do fully with having grown up in a family that didn't have a lot of money, but had enough to have what we needed. Going to college, getting a degree, leaving without too much debt because of scholarships, and then getting married immediately after. So there, I've always had two incomes.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is happy to work full time. So these facts of my life, I cannot exclude from my life that to others probably looks like a beautiful life of art and like figuring it out. And in so many ways, that's true. But also I feel so it feels like a true problem and a thing I wrestle with daily, that I feel bad at making money. Like there's just something in me that can't get that thing, and I don't even want it, but I want the legitimacy that getting paid provides. Yes. So it hurts when I do work and I don't get paid. Like, it just, it's, I dislike money. I don't like it.
But it's required.
But it's required. And I recognize that it's required. So I'm like, well, someone, I need to get it, you know? Like, and so I feel, and especially in the past year of trying to build a business, starting to make money, but doing something that is like kind of the thing, kind of not, like, I enjoy it, but it's, you know, like, and even there, not making enough money to feel like this is totally, like, you know?
Well, yeah, I was literally talking about this on the phone with my mother as I was moving my car before we were doing this, because mm-hmm. I was saying, and like, this is true, and if you don't feel this way, but like, it's kind of, it's embarrassing. Like, it's embarrassing to have a skill set. That's the other thing that I wanted to say, is you say something about how everyone loves writers and theories, in theory, but like, no one really likes them.
Yeah.
And it's the same. This is what I was saying to my mom. I was like, Mom, like, I just finished this project I love. I didn't get paid to do it. Like, anything I can get paid to do doesn't really have to do with what I'm good at. And that's mm-hmm. embarrassing when you show up and the thing you have to offer is like valued theoretically, but not in the thing, via the system we use to like affirm value, which is money.
Yeah.
And it is embarrassing. Like, you are trained in something, like, whether that's through what you went to school for versus like your self-taught way of sewing and like creating a business from the ground up. And it's embarrassing to not get paid the same way, or immediately, or like through the avenue that you would have, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if you just did things the way that you want, which is valuable and which people like.
Well, and I think part of the problem too is that, like, I want to give my work freely and immediately.
Yes.
I want to, like, not have to, the thing I really hate about this period of time is I feel like I have to withhold my work because publishers, like, don't want you to have it to any human in the world, like, poems. Like, I want to write a poem and send it to everybody. I want everyone to read it.
To give you feedback. Like, that's the nature of creation.
I just want it to, I want it to be read by anybody. And the idea that I have to literally, like, withhold my papers in a drawer and not show a soul, like, obviously it's not that extreme.
Well, but it is in some ways.
Well, in my whole, I feel like my career, whatever my career is, it's been built on making things and sharing them freely for whoever wants them. And even sewing patterns, they're not priced prohibitively, so I feel good about that. Like, if somebody wants to sew something, they can afford an $8 pattern. And if they can't, I want to give it to them. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not in it. No part of me is interested in capitalism. Like, I have not a business minded bone in my body, and that feels like essential to my true nature.
But I can't
exist
that way. Yeah.
No. And it's, and then in that thing, it's that thing that we're both frustrated about, of like wanting to get to talk to the publisher yourself and mm-hmm. like walk into the office and slap the essay on the table. The fact that then this thing that's already difficult for me to do feels so extraordinarily difficult and complicated.
And limited. Like, there's a very clear gate.
Yes.
And a gatekeeper.
Yeah, and very few people get to do it, and it's extremely impersonal and through the internet, and, like, you have to, like, use websites to submit things, and then you don't know if they got
it.
You never hear back.
It's the same with acting. It's exactly the same.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, and you're giving of yourself. It's not like a normal job where you show up and you do the job and you leave. Like, with writing, with acting, with creation, you're giving something that is, like, part of you.
Yeah.
Which we know everyone values. It's like, the things people talk about are movies and books and poems.
Yeah.
And, like, created, offered things.
But that's why if I'm going to do theater, I want to do it in an ensemble.
Yeah.
If I'm going to write something, I want to post it on my thing where I know my friends are going to see it and then read it. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm going to make a sewing pattern, I want the people I know to make it, you know? Like, it's everything I do, I'm like the, I'm like Jo writing plays for her sisters to perform. Like, well, it's, but that's the satisfaction, you know?
Yes, but that's why, that's what I was saying. Like, it is a story about commerce because that's her life and mm-hmm. she's content with that, but life won't let her.
She needs to make money.
She needs to make money, and she's writing those, like, how to, like, those kind of sordid stories, like, that are fantasy and graphic and whatever, and yeah. then, but the thing that she wants to write and drops off for, like, it's so, there's so many moving things about that movie, but when she just drops it off and says, like, I don't want to be paid for it, I want to own it.
Mm, yes.
And
yes.
that's,
yeah.
Because it's such a savvy,
it's
so moving. Yeah. It's so moving because it's like, I might not ever be paid for this, but it will be mine.
Yeah.
And I trust.
That is so moving.
It is so moving. And she knows that it's good enough that she probably will. But that in that moment, it's like, this isn't the point. And yeah. she doesn't know. She ultimately doesn't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. And it is funny, too, to think about how money has changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
And how at this point in time, it feels nearly impossible to. For so many people our age, none of us are doing well, you know?
Financially?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, no.
None of us are doing well.
But there's such a performative nature of doing well. Like, any, like, I hate discussion of social media, but, like, it's not, yeah. it's impossible not to. Like, you yeah. see people being like, I'm here, I'm at this nice restaurant. It's like, right. you see people performing success, and you're like, we are the most, like, in debt, like, yeah. not savings
yeah.
culture that has ever existed, like, with really, really clear class stratification mm-hmm. and, like, very obvious markers of privilege. And there's, like, all this, like, fake activism around, like, well, yeah, everyone should have this and that. It's, like, but it's, like, what?
Yeah.
That's not.
And the government hates us and doesn't care. And,
they,
like,
don't care. They don't care about poetry. They don't want poets. They want workers. And, like, I get it.
They don't care about human beings.
They don't
care. Well, they only. Yeah. It's like, it's getting to the point where I'm like, is this even a battle worth fighting? Like, what am I even doing? Like.
Well, but a society needs workers, right? Like, yeah. I'm not opposed to the nature of labor and the nature of commerce or, like, even a free market economy. It's like, yeah, that's, I'm yeah. not opposed to it. It's just, don't highly value something that you're not willing to
yeah.
give objective physical value, currency mm-hmm. for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's living in that over 100 years ago. She's living that same reality, this unmarried woman mm-hmm. who, like, has tried. That's the other thing, Amy. Like, so much of why this is so moving is we see her, like, spend those years trying to do something else and arriving at the thing and just having to be like, well, this could be the end for old Joe. Like, I might just live upstairs. No bae. No, yeah. like, and yeah. just be a disappointment.
Well, and she also, she gets to that point where she stops having an idea about her life, you know? Like, it's. She has an yeah. idea. She has an idea. She goes to New York. She has the idea. She writes these things.
She says, like, no to Lori. She does.
Yeah. yeah. And then something happens and it's something like it's a hinge turns. Her sister dies. And her life is just different and she doesn't have an idea about it anymore. She like, and from that place, she moves forward. She steps through the door, you know, into something new. Which you couldn't have done before.
And you never can, and you can't predict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why, like, I feel truly new stepping into this decade and truly different. I feel different. And it feels like a big deal that I feel relatively ready, maybe, to have a baby. Like, 'cause in some ways, that I think that will be one of the greatest challenges of my life, for sure. I mean, who would it not be for? But no, for but me in particular,
yes.
I think it will be an experience that I cannot prepare for in any way, that will just fully arrest me. Like, it'll just take everything mm-hmm. over. And I want to feel that. I want to be transformed. And I think the next thing that will transform me is having children. And so now I'm standing on the edge of that. Like, at 16, I was standing on the edge of my life and mm-hmm. of what will my career be? Who will I marry? Where will I end up? Like, what is it going to be? I have no idea. Now I'm 26 and I'm standing on the edge of I have a spouse. I think I do know what my career and work is. Like, I'm sort of starting it. And what I'm standing on the edge of is, like, giving away most of my time. And that's giving away most of my time in such a way that it can never come back, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's, like, it'll be as if there's a hole in my bucket where my bucket has been so tightly held for so long, you know? And it's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
But I feel excited about it. I feel an artistic excitement. I'm like, this will be vital. This will change everything. It will, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like how you feel at 16, where you're like, I know something's going to happen and I don't know what it is yet, you know?
And you never could have predicted at 16 that this is how you would feel
yeah.
at the next ledge.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. So it's really interesting. And, but also, like, there is a grief in being at the end of this thing, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, that's another thing you say in there. It's like, it's different, but it doesn't fully go away. And yeah. I think there's an idea in childhood that, like, when something changes, it means leaving one thing to go to another, but there's more carriage.
Yeah. Well, and I think the last thing that we can say about this, and then we'll move on to your essay, is that I think the thing that signals to me that perhaps I am ready, or as ready as I could be, mm-hmm. is that thing that at the end of the essay, the fact that sometimes I look at my life and it truly feels one, like it's beautiful, and two, like it could truly be anybody.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about Little Women too, is I was like, how is this movie or this story that was written by someone totally different in a totally different time, like, how is it mine? It's because it's poetry. It's because that's what art and poetry does, is hand yourself to yourself as if you are the whole thing, you know? And the detachment, I think that I've, going from 16 when I was fully attached to myself, mm-hmm. fully inhabiting my own thing, and now at 26 beginning to learn this sort of like detachment that means I can see, and that echoes in so many areas, in faith, in friendships, and so many things. That's a real thing that has been shifting in me. It makes me feel like maybe motherhood won't kill me. It will make me come alive, you know?
And that's the ultimate act of participation, is yeah. motherhood. Like, yeah. that's the relinquishing of the individual for the, and everything you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, and how much it's in the Bible, how much it's yeah. it feels like the next,
It's the next thing.
It's the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So funny. Just funny how clear. Funny how, like...
And how there's just no way of knowing that it will be that clear, and you spend all that time waiting for it to be clear, and then it is, and you're like, this isn't what I asked for.
I know.
And you're like, this is good.
And but... probably in, like, however many years when I do have the baby, I'll be like, what the heck? Like, what was I thinking? But at this point, yeah. We'll see. So, we'll see. Ready for a little marmy.
On that note.
Anyway.
Little Women, an essay by Jess, originally published January 27th, 2020. Over Christmas, I went to see Little Women with my family. My grandmother is blind, so I whispered when the story went back and forth between past and present. My sister sat in the row behind us. Joe sits in the back so we can't see her cry! While the rest sprawled right through the middle of the theater. We were in a room full of mothers and daughters. You could feel something come over the room, and you could feel us sending it back out again. I have since seen it two more times, and intend to see it two more for the number of times Greta Gerwig should have been nominated for Best Director and wasn't. This movie for me, like Amy, felt like a personal gift at the dawn of a new decade, a totem of who I have been and who I am becoming in light of my life thus far. There are essays worth to come on that. For now, I just can't stop talking about the movie itself. As a lifelong devotee of the book and several other adaptations, this is easily my favorite because it's so thematic. It's almost a whodunit of how the girls become who they do. Emotional clues told in reverse, often shadowed in the future. How do we become who we are? Since seeing the film, several friends have kindly teased me, "You're such a Joe." And while, yes, with each passing day, I am headed closer and closer to a future of spinsterhood and madly writing classic works while my mother brings me trays of food between impassioned speeches about my beliefs, I feel much more attached to the concept of Little Women than any one character. Because I'm not a Joe. I'm a March girl. One of my favorite things about the story is that while it clearly delineates each of the March girls' distinct identities and journeys, it so beautifully shows how they really are never themselves without each other. They have a communal identity that is simply stronger than any personal one, more formidable. I find that beautiful, implicating, and frankly, radical. They belong to each other. No joy or grief is complete until it is shared. One of the lies I historically believe is that great art can only be created in stark isolation, the kind where you hole yourself up away for 3 months away from civilization and return with truth that can only be found in utter silence. And while there's surely some truth to that, I love that Jo writes the beginning of her life's work in the attic of her childhood home, wearing the writing jacket she has since she was a girl. We want to go away. We want to come home. We want to be great. We want to be loved. We want our own lives. We want to share them. Jo goes all the way to New York trying to figure out her life and create from it the greatness she longs for, yet she never understands it better than when she is talking in her attic with her mother. Of all the scenes, those are the ones that hit the hardest for me. I too am most myself with my mother, most able to admit to my own flaws and desires without fear of judgment, with full assurance of support. So much of our story can only be understood in retrospect and with the aid of input from those who know and love us best. Isn't it wild, the independence that comes from interdependence, the bravery forged out of knowing you are loved well? There's an unabashed desire and attempts at greatness, too, that you really don't see in most female-centric movies. When Jo yells at Professor Bear, "No one will forget Jo March," you can see the internal battle of feeling childish for voicing it, but also not backing down in saying it. Amy says something similar to Laurie after chastising him repeatedly for squandering his own talent and resources. "I want to be great or nothing." These opinions are foiled beautifully with Beth and Megs, both of whom clearly have great talent in separate areas, but don't feel the need to pursue them beyond the joy they bring their family. How can all four have come from the same family? Because they were loved into their choices. They were celebrated, told they could succeed in multiple environments, sent into multiple environments, forced to think of the collective before they could tend to the individual, and they made the right choice. It is the only narrative I've seen in which a woman so-called has it all, in which she actually does. And I think the reason she is able to is a ground-deep, lifelong network with other women. Every girl should have that. Full exposure and encouragement in all possible choices, so when she finally does make the one that will launch her into adulthood, she knows she's making her decision. My own womanhood is so much to do with that. My life has so often been defined by caring so much more about my family's approval and love, for better or worse, than anyone else's, and thriving because of the loving environment that was created therein, even amidst chaos, even amidst sorrow, that allows a girl to think she can change the world. While so much of the movie clearly yearns for a better future for women, I can't help longing for the world they live in. There were so few options for women, yet the ones available are exactly the kind I want. Marching into a publishing office, fresh work in hand, presenting my case before the court. Or, better yet, joining a traveling troupe of actors and never working too far from the people I love. I think that's the central paradox of the film. It clearly presents how limited a woman's life was, particularly in the now famed last-minute speech delivered by Florence Pugh's Amy. Yet I can't leave that movie not wanting exactly the life they lead. One of familial closeness, artistic realization, and accepting only the love of a real equal. It is so much about paddling your own canoe and blazing toward a better future, yet its ultimate power is in its marriage of the traditional with the progressive. The love they share with their suitors is real, full, but clearly can't quite add up to how much they love each other. One of my favorite moments in the whole movie is when Joe and Meg go to the theater and Meg takes Mr. Brooks's arm, but when Laurie offers Joe his, she swats him and grabs Meg's instead so they can walk together and talk about the play. And while Meg clearly loved holding on to him, she doesn't bat an eye when her sister comes for her instead. This is, of course, reflected in reverse when Amy ends up marrying Laurie and Joe sees her for the first time. She loves her sister far more even than the idea of being taken care of by someone who used to adore her. All she ever was to Laurie was an ideal, someone on a pedestal due to historically strong feelings. It's Amy and Laurie that share grown-up love, the kind that challenges them both and asks the best of each of them. There is a reason we grow out of childhood love, and it's just that, we grow up. There's a reason Joe reconsiders Laurie in adulthood, desperate and grieving and filled with unmet hopes. She has spent years far away from home pursuing a dream, meeting and falling in love with a man who loves her through interrupting her own inner monologue about herself, trying to become a person she felt her childhood world could not offer her. And then she goes home, pronounces her dream dead, until her sister asks her to resurrect it as her own dying wish. Wouldn't you want to return to the person who loved you blindly without account or self-respect? First love is defined by senseless devotion. It would be very easy to say that Joe is married to her work, but that's not quite right. Her sisters are the love of her life. Her writing is the task of her life. Her dream of writing is often coupled, at least verbally, with her desire to provide for her family. Yet doing so takes her away from them, ultimately leaving her unfulfilled. She desperately wants to participate in the world she has longed for, yet she constantly mentions which aspects of it her family would love to whoever she's with. I feel that way. Half the reason I want to find success as an actor is so I can buy my family a compound where we can literally just hang out together, a place where we can wake up and always find someone we love sitting at the table before we set out on our day's separate tasks. My own girlhood is drawing to a close. I have gone off, alone, to see if anything is as beautiful or possible as the dreams I have longed for since concrete thought was available to me. Something has ended. What exactly? Yet so many things continue. The people I love are still here. I know more things. Most choices come with cost, but they are worth paying if the expense is not the thing you love most dearly. And while ambition and artistry and independence are worthy pursuits that must be thoroughly sought lest they forever haunt, I don't think they're mutually exclusive with not being near who you love best. I think girlhood is a time of input. We are the receivers, the ones who benefit, experiencing that which we will spend the rest of our lives reflecting on. And womanhood is some mystical shift into output, entire books written only once we understood what happened.
Okay, so first of all, my thought is, like, that's one of the best reviews of a movie I've ever heard, like, because it's, I love the way that you said, even in the essay, like, there's a lot that I could say about, like, how this relates to my life and blah, 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 but you were like, but I want to talk about the film, and you do stick to that, like, it's, everything you say is really, like, it's just a great way of engaging a text. So first of all, like, that was thrilling. I want to start by talking about something at the end of the essay. The last thing you say is that childhood is a time of input and womanhood is like a mystical shift into output. And I think that's so true. And we were kind of already talking about that. Like, it's, but I want to hear more about that from you and keep talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, even earlier, in when we were talking earlier and I mentioned that thing about, like, listening to podcasts of people I admire and, yeah, like, whatever. Like, when I wrote that, I was thinking specifically professionally. Like, I have spent so much time, like, seeking, like, instructions on how to get to the life that I have like, longed to live, and really in this past year moving out here in particular, I have found myself in the same situations, and I, like, even when I was filming the other day, I thought of this thing that I read that Julianne Moore said, where she, because I was feeling really underprepared. Like, I was feeling guilty about being unprepared, and I wasn't unprepared. Mm-hmm. And I, like, Julianne Moore said something about, like, I like to show up not particularly prepared and let the camera, like, and I know that's kind of a, it's not a silly example, but it's a kind of minor example, but stuff like that. Like, as a girl, I felt like, okay, there's all these things that are going to happen to me, and, like, I want to know how to do them, but, like, I want to find out for myself, but I, like, want to hear from these people that I admire. And, like, I felt that a lot professionally, but the more I think about it, and particularly in the lens of Little Women, I wrote my mom a Valentine. I wrote, as you know, I love to write Valentines.
Yes, and then
I,
of course.
Of course, yes, of course, business as usual. And I put, I told her and I meant it. I was like, you taught me how to love. Like, and that's a real.
And knowing her, that is what she taught you.
She did. She taught me how to, like, love.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah, that's not a general
no.
thing.
No, no, I just got chills. Because she did. And that's what I mean. It's like, and that's part of it too, is as a child, as a girl, you're getting all this love. Like, you're receiving a lot of, and love is masked as different things, right? Like, it can be over concern. It can be, like, feeding you. It can be yelling at you because they want, like, Lady Bird. Like, she loves her. She yells at her all the time, but that's love. And so, like, as, it's this, you're receiving so much love. You're receiving so much attention, even if it's not the quality or the kind or the, like, iteration of it that you want.
Yeah.
And then when you somehow become a woman, all of a sudden, you're like, I have a lot to give.
Yeah.
And I
have to give
it. And I have to give it. And you, like, it's so much more natural. It's kind of what we were talking about before with romance. Like, I remember as a 16-year-old, the same thing. Like, I just wanted someone to come, like, and say, like, I pick you. Like, I was really specific about, like, what version of that I wanted. So I was, like, often disappointed. But I, like, now, it's so funny. Like, when I meet a guy that I like, I feel so much less concerned with, like, I hope, I'm like, no, I just, like, want to talk to you. Like, I'm really, like, it's just natural. Like, it's a, I think, natural to want to give, but, like, it's natural as a child, I think, to be receiving. Because you don't know anything yet. Like, you're just, you're walking through, you're like, I am here.
No, and everything you have, you've received.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you, arrive into it. And I mean, I still am the recipient of many, many things.
Yes,
like, but I,
and will be for your
for
life.
For always. It will always be. But I think womanhood is that beginning when you notice, like, this is, I want to give this away. Like, I freely want to give and, like, take, and it is really feminine. Like, it's a nurturing thing. It's like, I want to take care of, I want to give, I want to console, I want to, like, hold your, you know what I like, I want to hold you with me,
because all that energy that's spent as a child processing what you're getting is like, you, that some of that energy is freed up, or a lot of it maybe, and there is, it has to go somewhere, and I think actually the proper place for it to go is
others.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the cycle of life, right? Like, you're given all that input, and
it's biological,
like, it is biological, and it shows up out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, I have much to give. I have a lot to get. And, like, it's interesting, the relationships where you will always be the receiver. And those are almost exclusively familial. Like, it's a little that way with mentors as well. Like, but, like, with Mark even, like, how we've both had so much input from him. But the older we get with him, like, we're more, like, we have something to offer. And there's something about familial relationships where, like, my older sisters will always be my older sisters. Like, no matter how much I have to give them, there will always be an element of.
And that might be the, like, very special and particular gift that family gives to us. Because, like, it's, that's really unusual in the way that the world works, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, well, and it's also really, in some ways, as a woman, like, because patriarchy also wants to be like, I'm the giver, you're the receiver.
It's like, but it's both.
I know. And so it's interesting that, like in family, you have to continue receiving, but, like, that's the beautiful thing. It's not a, like, thing
and
that
you're. And the maddening thing. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Because in the other areas of your life, you're giving much more. But, like, in the areas where you're forced to receive, it almost feels like violent misunderstanding, because it doesn't match the other areas.
And one thing that you said is the independence that comes from interdependence, which I thought was, like, basically all the things that I pulled out of the essay now are the things that the first time I read it, I read almost as aphorisms, as like truisms, where I was like, oh my gosh, like this is like the Tao. Like it's like, you know, like it feels like these like little koans, like true.
Like a maxim?
Or like, yeah. Okay. Yeah, lots of ways to say the same thing. But yeah, like the independence that comes from interdependence, where it's like, that is such a like wisdom truth, you know, but it's like, but it's so experienced through life. And it's what freedom and privilege are built on, mm-hmm. you know, like the people that have the hardest time in the world are the ones with nobody to turn to.
With no network.
No network.
With no web.
Yeah. No web. No one to call when there's something is wrong or, you know, mm-hmm. when you're taken out of your context, you lose your power and you have nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's the family, the way that Little Women really is like a tree that grows out of these like deep roots of like a family.
Yes.
And that's something I know that you have like, it's pretty central to your own self, is your family is really a thing for you, you know?
Yeah. Which I mean, it's, I was like surprised even writing this because mm-hmm. up until really a couple years ago, like I wouldn't have, like, there's always been that thing where I say, like, for better or worse, like, the mm-hmm. approval and love of my family. And, like, for a while, I would have said that was for the worse. And it's really not because of anything in particularly bad, but, like, I still didn't get. It's like, no, like, this is a great gift to, like, really be interdependent with your family.
Yeah.
Is, like, there's this really Western idea that, like, you have to go off and, like, forge your individual life. And, like, as an ambitious person with a lot of independent, like, behavior and actions, like, I was often like, yeah, my family's great. It's like, no, like, it's a privilege. It's a joy to have been, like, formed in a community and not, mm-hmm. like, necessarily as specialized as, like, my 16-year-old self would have liked to have, even though I yeah. was. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, I didn't even see. It's like, you were given most of the things that you wanted, but you just didn't see them that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and so amazing how when it does switch to output, that output, the outcome of it becomes to be, I just want to be back with my family. Like, yes. I just want to do something so that we can continue to be together.
And that's exactly what Jo is experiencing, right? Yeah. Like, she goes away because it's like, okay, well, I have to go away to do all the things I need to do. But ultimately, she realized it's like, this is in service of just getting back. What's the point in the movie when she says, like,
is it when Meg's getting married?
No, it's because she says, I can't believe childhood is over. Yeah. It's after Beth dies. Like, she says something to the effect of, it will never, they're never all in the same house again.
No, yeah, it's when she's walking with Amy and Meg.
Yeah.
And they say something like, that was the last time we were all together, yes. or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. And that's what you realize is, you're subconsciously pursuing something that has already happened. Mm-hmm. And there's a really, really narrow path to get back to that thing.
Yeah.
To make it possible again. Because life, like this, again, with the cycle or the, like, almost biological nature of, like, you then go live your own life and you don't even realize, like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't want to return to because of nostalgia or childhood or whatever. It's like, no, it's this gorgeous thing yeah. that I thought I had to leave.
Yeah. Ambition makes us so easily detach. And then.
Yes. And it's, but that's not bad, right? No, like, it's and not. You have to go, and I, like, you have to go do that.
You have to.
Because you wouldn't know. Like, if she just stayed and did, like, tutor girls in the town and married Laurie and whatever, like, she would never have.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, it would never have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She never would have written Little Women.
She never would have written Little Women. I feel so strong. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, I feel that way, but I know it's like, you have to go away. And it's like, yeah. it might just be a long time. Like, she didn't actually write Little Women until she was, like, well into her 30s.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. You look like you have another.
Well, I have so many things. like, yeah, well, and even the thing where everybody says that you're a Jo, and you're like, no, I'm a March girl.
I'm a March girl.
I'm all of them, and really, I'm just the family thing. Is like, I'm just in the family. It's yeah. the family. It's not, oh, man.
And that's the communal versus the individual
and
as
how
well.
They're all loved into their choices.
Yes.
That's another
they're
thing.
They're loved yeah. into their choices, yeah. and that's huge, and it, like, I, writing this made me, it's like a lot of, most people don't get that. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, it looked like something else, but I was loved into my choices.
Yes.
Like across the board. really deeply loved into my choices, which I think is probably why people are like, you're a Joe. And it's like, well, yeah, because I was told that I could do pretty much anything I wanted to do. Yes. And anytime I tried to do something, even if I was shit at it, my parents would be like, well, you're brilliant, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and that's the beautiful thing, I think, about this film, too, is you get to see four women who are all different.
Really different.
Find their way to the thing that is theirs to do. And they know. They
and
know
that's
why.
Feminism.
Exactly.
That's the actual thing.
Beth says, I'm sorry, Joe, I have to die. You know, like, I have to play my piano and then I have to die. The tide is going out. Like, it's this is what's true of me and my life. And Meg, on the day of her marriage, says to Joe, our dreams are different and that's good. Like, I know what my thing is. It doesn't make them less. And I want to get married, you know, like, it's only because they were loved so well can they make choices that are actually of their true self.
And without questioning them. Yeah. Like, every single one of them,
with confidence.
With confidence, chooses the thing that they actually want, which is so rare for a young woman to actually get to choose the thing that she really wants.
Yeah, I know. Their self-awareness.
Across the board.
Across the board. And I think that could be why it's another reason that you and I were both moved so much by this film, because something that I know to be true of the two of us is we have very much self-awareness, perhaps too much.
Too much.
And so to watch a film about women with that same amount of self-awareness operating in a world that is still difficult, like, self-awareness does help people in a lot of ways, but it doesn't make things easier. And all it does is add depth to the conversation, and all it does is, like, make the love even more complicated and deep, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Another thing I loved that you said, among the many things, was that the sisters are the love of her life and the writing is the task of her life.
Mm-hmm.
That really, I mean, that just makes me think about what does that mean for me? And for
I know,
you,
I thought that while I was reading it, sitting next to you, because, like, that's different.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
And
what is it for you?
For me, what I think about when I wrote that, the way I think, and this is, like, so in tandem with the childhood versus adulthood and into adulthood, I thought as a child, 16, mm-hmm. let's say, like, I was like, I will meet and marry a person who will, like, understand me. And, like, truly, this is embarrassing. It's like, my life will begin when, like, the life that I think about will begin when. And, like, the deeper I got, a lot of the trouble of my own idea towards my family has been that we have suffered the same thing together.
Mm.
Like, our suffering has been largely communal. Like, there have been things that have happened to each of us that have been just ours, like, that we have supported and loved each other and, like, tried to understand each other through, but that have just been ours. Mm-hmm. But largely, like, we have experienced the same, like, four big, really painful, like, almost life crippling, like, ending, frankly, almost life-ending things together.
Yeah.
And I have thought about that a lot really since I graduated, because I'm like, I've, like, dated guys, I've, like, had these, like, whatever, with different men who have, like, understood or not understood me mm-hmm. in varying degrees. And when I look at, like, when I talk to my sister, I'm like, you will always love me.
Yeah.
There is nothing I could do that would ever stop you from loving me. And I might not always like what you have to say to me. I might not always like the way that you go about loving me, but you are, like, I am sure of your love as I am sure that I am breathing.
Mm.
And
wow.
Like, and that's not to say, like, you and Isaiah have such a gorgeous relationship. Like, it is so rare and strange. And so it kind of feels weird to talk about this with you, but, like, I really was raised in an environment, and, like, this, it wasn't, like, a warning, and it wasn't, like, a negative truth. It just was. It's, like, you can marry someone, and they can change.
Mm,
like, you can meet a person, and they can become a different person while being married to you, And you can become a different person while being married to them.
Yeah.
And so I think, I know in childhood, a lot of my thought was like, I will get married and it will change for the better. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, my life will begin when? And it's like, my life began long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it belongs to, like, a marriage is a beautiful, precious gift that, like, I've seen so many people, like, so many of my close friends are in, and I'm like, that's gorgeous. And, like, yeah, I want to be married, but, like, my ideas about it are a lot different because of the way that marriage has been in my life and in the lives of the people in my family. And in realizing, it's like, these are the people that, like, have seen it all. And, like, any man that I meet now will never really know
mm-hmm.
what happened. And that's fine. That's not bad. But, like, he can never know the trauma, frankly, that, like, exists in my life.
Doesn't
go away. That's just, like, part of it. And the mm-hmm. and when I say the writing is the work of her life, like, those are the two things. I think if you're an ambitious person, it's like there's the love of your life and the work of your life. And I think it's easy to think you have to pick one over the other. And I think you don't. Like, I think if the love...
Or that the work has to be the love, you know?
Yes. Yes. And I have definitely felt that way before, where I'm like, well, I'm just going to have to do this then, and it will mean choosing this over that. And it's like, that's not... Like, acting is the love of my life. I think we've talked about this. Like, I am a better writer than an actor, but, like, it's the thing. Yeah. I can't not do it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well then... My family is the love of my life and acting is the work of my life. And, like, those are, like, you hear that sentence and you're like, well, that doesn't fit with the narrative. Like, you'll meet the love of your life and, like, the task of your life will be the thing you're successful at. It's like, but that's not the case.
That's not life.
It's not life. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. this movie.
I know. It makes me want to go watch it again.
And it is funny. I mean, that goes back to, like, it would have been simpler to say that in the 1800s, probably, because mm-hmm. you could have joined a troupe of traveling actors and, like, you could have been like, okay, great, then I'll have a life on the stage and I'll see my family and blah, blah, blah.
And, like, I'll help pay for their life. Like, it, like, won't just be about,
The path was more direct. And you, my loud dress, sorry, you write in the essay about feeling frustrated that, like, you want to have the options that they have, the more
they're
direct
the only
way.
Ones I want. Yeah.
And there is that sense of, like, homesickness for a different time when, like, it was truly simpler then.
There is freedom and limitations. And I think in the world that we live in, there's kind of this, this idea of, like, no, more choices, like, better decisions, better life quality. And, like, I genuinely believe there is a lot of freedom and structure.
Yes, and me too.
I know you do. And, like, I think that's been a lot of the, like, rub I get from people when I'm like, oh, yeah, I am a Christian in 2020. Like, mm-hmm. I do believe in God. Like, I have chosen that. Like, and I feel like, well, but you can't. It's like, but there is freedom in knowing that you really don't know very much. Like, you can learn, you can experience, you can, like, live your life and discover truths about yourself and truth about mm-hmm. the world, but their options were the only ones I wanted. And it, like, I remember thinking that, and I was like, does that make me, like, am I an ungrateful woman? Like, she had to go through all this stuff. It's like, no, that's just what I want. I don't want to have to deal with all the other stuff I'm going to have to do. I want to be able to walk in, drop off my papers. I want to be able to walk in, audition. I don't want to deal with it's what you're talking about with publishing. I don't want to send you a self-tape of me among 200 other women and, like, hope to hear from you. And and it's the same with love, too. Like, it feels like, with the world being so-called more connected, it makes it much more difficult to meet a person that you actually... Like, one of the things I wanted to write more about but didn't because I really wanted to write about the movie is, like, Professor Bear really does interrupt her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's kind of, like, doing her own thing. And he's just like, the conversation we love her. He's like, oh, it's not very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't like it.
I don't like it. And it's, I mean, you and I would never say, I really hope that a man says that to me one day. But, like, the fact that someone would, that is a level of partnership that you actually...
I've had that actual verbatim conversation with my husband. He has told me that he doesn't like my work before. But it's because he respects me and thinks it's good. Thinks what I do, thinks I'm talented. Mm-hmm. That's... It's extraordinary. And it does, like, it does interrupt you.
Yes. Ugh. Love is an interrupting force. Yeah. As much as it is, like, a stable networking thing.
It really is.
Ugh. And there's freedom in that. Like, there's much more freedom in that kind of thing. Like, allowing yourself to be interrupted.
That's why it's interesting to be watching Little Women in 2020. Mm-hmm. Because... In so many ways, it feels so immediate, it feels so modern, it feels so, all these things. But then also there is this layer of it where you're like, but what am I to do?
Yeah.
Like, what am I supposed to do?
Well, in the end, it's literally a dream.
Yeah,
like, it's just totally. This idealized, and there's, I mean, there's nothing, you write about that in yours. It's like, okay, well, how do I proceed?
What do I do now? Yeah.
Like, and that's the input-output thing, too, though. Like, I was looking for a manual. I'm looking for a series of steps. And mm-hmm. all anyone can tell you over and over again is, like, you learn by going where you have to go.
You just continue.
You just go on.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about Greta's work is that mm-hmm. she brings in the ending that is just the book. The ending that is Louisa May Alcott holding her book. You know?
Because that is where it ends.
That has no marriage and no birthday cake for Marmy, like, it with the school and the children. Like, the ending that is just the open-endedness of, like, the book is published, but now what? Like, what do I do next? What, I have the rest of my life. Like, what am, you know?
Yeah.
Even the satisfaction of having the book published, it's like, well... I'm alive, you know, like,
and there's always going to be more than one. Like, there's always, it's the nature of wanting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you get some version of it and you're like, oh, but that's,
it's so satisfying, but it's so not enough. It's...
Well, and immediately after you get it, you're like, but there's just the, but,
I know.
And that's life force. Life force is desire, is to want, is to need something beyond the thing that's in front of you.
Yeah.
And that's why you stay alive. Like, that is natural. That's like basic instincts.
Yeah. And that's when that's the output too, mm-hmm. is that, like, you don't stop when it works, or you don't, like, when one book is published, you don't say, okay, great.
I did it.
It's done. I got the job. I did the thing. It was great. Good job. Because, like, we have to nurture. We have to keep giving something. We can't, like, there's this energy that has to keep going. Which is why the school is such a beautiful ending, mm-hmm. because that is truly just like an open-ended, continuous place to give and give and give.
And it's a replication with improvement on their own upbringing.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
They're like, we're doing the same thing, communal, like, with male and female input, like, but adding the element of education, because not all of them got to go to school because mm-hmm. the schools were so bad. Like...
You know.
So it's this gorgeous, like, okay, yes, and. Like, we're going to recreate but improve based on what we know. And, like, that's a life well lived, right? It's, like, eating the corn, tossing the cob. Like,
but it's also a fantasy.
It is a fantasy.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting about it.
I know. So is it? Maybe?
It's cubist. That's what Greta would say. I have listened to
so many
hours of Greta Gerwig talking that I feel like she's me. No, I actually do feel like she's, like, my mystical sibling, though.
I think that is not far off.
But anyway, like, it's interesting that in Louisa May Alcott's life, it was much more ugly.
Yes.
Much more complicated.
I've had a lot of sad things, so I write jolly tales.
Yeah, like, her life was sad.
It was a bummer.
Oh, my gosh. Like, so, again, it's like, even though she had this success and... She still had her family and things, but, like, things really, like, only go downhill. Mm-hmm.
They do, and that's it, is you just recognize. But, and that's why it's so hard to,
That's why so many people are nostalgic. That's why so many people mythologize youth and spend the rest of their lives trying to, like, recreate or revisit it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you just accept that that really is the best time and that there was no way you were capable of recognizing it in real time.
Yeah.
Like, that leads to a better life because you can replicate as much as you can and try to improve as much as you can and recognize it's like you're
and
now.
And give it to somebody else.
And give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Through your work, through your, like, having children, through taking care of people.
Through any relationship.
Through any relationship. Yeah. It's, and that it is pure output. Because input feels great.
Yes, it does.
Being given something feels
so much better.
It's wonderful. Output is exhausting. Output makes you doubt yourself. It makes you go crazy, you know?
And it's like, lonely.
It is lonely. Because you're alone and you're like flinging your energy out into the void. And you're just like, hello? Like,
anybody here?
Who will fill me back up? You know, it's terrifying. And it's like in Fleabag also, like, love makes me do bad things, it makes me sick, it's terrible, and blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, like, output is difficult, but it's like, we have to do it, it's where we are.
Well, you know? And yes, and the grown-up thing is recognizing, it's like, I will do all the output, whether that's towards a relationship, towards work,
yeah,
towards, quote-unquote, creating a life, and recognizing, it's like, there is, like, more chance that this will not work than chance yes. that it will. And the input makes you believe that it is possible. Mm. And so when you come,
yeah,
when you come up in an environment of input that is strongly telling you you can do it, you just have a yeah. better shot at, like, making it.
Because all you have is your life. All you have is, you know, and like what I said at the end of my thing, like, the film just made me feel my own life, mm-hmm. you know, like, there's nothing outside my life. I couldn't understand Little Women if I hadn't had a childhood, you know, and everybody's had a childhood, so it's, but, like, whatever you have, you're just seeing it in so many versions out in the world, you know.
A great network of souls.
A great network of souls. My sisters. I'm gonna make sure. The last thing. Oh, we're very nearing the time. I just wanted to bring up the thing that you said at the beginning. We kind of worked from end to beginning. It's just that, like, what's so beautiful is the thematic movement through it, and that it's almost like a whodunit and how we become who we are. And I feel like that's something that I've been seeing you also do through your writing and through also, like, your work in acting.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I literally, after I saw the movie, I think the second time, I went through my journals of the past 10 years and I was reading it, and it literally felt like seeing a girl trying to put together clues in real time of who she was.
Yeah.
Like, of writing this stuff down. And as the person reading it, I was like, you knew.
Yeah.
Like, you were sure of yourself, but you were afraid to trust your gut for whatever reason, whether that was, like, bad religion or, you know, youthful ignorance, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And arriving in my life where I am now.
Becoming who you are.
Becoming, yeah. And, like, it's not even becoming, Amy. It's more like, oh. Like, it was all yes. there.
Yeah. Oh, that other essay you wrote, This Is Your Life.
This is your life. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's everywhere. That's all over my life right now. It's like, yeah. This is my life.
This is my life.
And anyone who knows you well can see that, but, like, and I think once you've rested into it, that's all these other things we talk about. Then it's like, well, okay, that means that my life is going to look this way, mm-hmm. which will require cutting out this and adding in this and, like, resting yeah. with this and giving up this.
Yeah. And note, and seeing that this is your life is really that invitation into the next thing, mm-hmm. which is the giving it away.
Yeah.
You know, once you can see it, which takes your whole child, like, it takes this
it
whole
takes
decade.
More than. Yeah. And for some, and, like, whatever, it will keep doing it, and it yeah. will take longer. It takes longer sometimes, but that.
Yeah.
That Wendell Berry poem, damn it. Like, when I read that, the every day you have less reason not to give yourself away.
Yes. Yes.
And it's true, because once you've landed in it, it's like, I really don't. Like, there's no time to worry about if I'm good enough. There's no time to worry about if this
will land with this person, if this will be understood. It's like, this is what I have to give.
Yeah.
This is what I'm able to
Everything
give.
Everything I have, I'll give.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a long time to get there.
A lifetime, you might say.
Yeah. But interesting that we're both, it does feel like we're turning a corner. Mm-hmm. I do. I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
Even if no one else thinks so, but you and I.
Here today in Hollywood, California.
Where dreams come true.
We better wrap this up.
It's time. Oh, God.
Okay. Well.
If you're still here.
Go see Little Women.
And thank you for listening.
We love you. We'll be doing this more regularly now.
But we can't tell you when.
But goodbye.